bring give some impetus for chances of a solution in the medium term. And ASEAN does think that since Vietnam most probably is going to withdraw anyhow in 1990, as he promised, because of Si Bai then hopefully have a fait accompli, you know, in place in Kampuchea. Therefore, why not propose something from now on until then, so that it will not be a complete fait accompli only in the interest of Vietnam, but also in the interest and for the security of Thailand at the same time. Because if nothing happened, ASEAN is definitely worried, and Indonesia also included particularly, that the fait accompli is going to happen anyhow. And therefore, you know, how still to move on time to prevent that, definitely bring some urgency now to start with looking for a solution. On the USSR PRC side, you know, I just would like to comment on Yuwono's point. I do see though that it's more possible, you know, that there is might be some movement in the next few years on that question. I just don't see that it's just going to get stuck, and therefore I do see there's an alleviation of fears on the PRC side, that Kamran and Danang is meant to be especially for them or against them, and this encircling effort of the Soviet Union towards them. And that's why I do see that on that score, even, you know, on that relationship, there might be movement, and therefore the willingness of USSR to put some more pressure on the Vietnamese in the future. Not maybe immediately now, explicitly. Well, when Sivaranadze was in Jakarta, as you remember, a few months ago, he was asked to push the Vietnamese more for looking for a solution. He said, don't ask me now to push. Why don't you push and I will push for you from behind? And so whatever you are getting out of the Vietnamese, I will support it, he said. But don't ask me now at this stage, at this very delicate stage of our relationship, to do it as such. But again, you know, on the PRC side, I do see that they put this as the main question because nothing moved on this front yet. There is no impetus, actually, why they should put this as the main obstacle. Nothing at all. According to them, at least, when I talk at length on this Kampuchea problem with them in Beijing, the main reason is they said, we would like to get something out from the Soviet on this point as well because they have moved on the two other points. So now we put all the concentration on Kampuchea to get them moving on this point as well. That's the main reason behind it, they said. And besides that, of course, as Doug has pointed out, this war of attrition along the border is just not for nothing, mind you. It has put a lot of drain on both sides, indeed, seemingly. Also on the Chinese side, that also they recognize, you know. And so there is that possibility here, even, you know, that this could bring some movements, and that is not completely, that does not get completely stuck as you know, was mainly thinking of, I think. And then so whatever it is worth, you know, when Deng Xiaoping said, well, for the time being I don't have any worry about this basis in Kamran and Danang of the Soviet, he has said that. And so I do think, of course, that is not completely true, but I think that is a kind of alleviation of the fear so far. What I haven't seen in this both papers, actually, is what the expectations are of the United States. Nothing has been said except that the United States just left everything behind, just like that, you know, to us and the Chinese to solve. And I have to admit, you know, maybe Carl can mention some of the points that is possible, what the United States still can do. Well, I'm rather pessimistic also, but still I think that is one factor that we should not completely write off in the whole diplomatic game, I think. At least for Thailand. I think that is still, if that is true, that Thailand psychologically is still, as we have found out in January meeting in Kuala Lumpur, that the first wife is still the USA, and the second wife, or the mistress only, you know, is China. And ASEAN is only a temporary girlfriend, you know. Then I think that if that is still valid, definitely USA has a role to play in the future, according to me. then One factor where Japan also could maybe play, I think, and that is not very obvious. Coronari has said that in Singapore, but that has not been taken up as serious, and the serious of the effect possible. And I think Japan has a role to play in the whole context of really giving the alternative to Vietnam, you know, for economic relations. And I don't see, and I don't misunderstand me now. Because the problem is in an economic relationship, definitely could replace the Soviet, according to me. And I think that is one factor that we should not completely dismiss, as because that could be a very important factor in the future, in looking for a solution, I think. And here, Japan definitely is willing, and has publicly said so, and it has not been taken up as serious as it should, according to me. Then two more last thing. I think if Afghanistan could move, and Sifra Nasir has said that in Bangkok actually, although it was misunderstood, then definitely I think it will have some impact on our quicker possibility of a quicker solution in Kampuchea, I think. Then the last thing.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Can you repeat that last sentence?
I think if Afghanistan is going to move, really, in the near future, that will have an impact on a quicker solution for Kampuchea as well. That is my hunch. And then the last point I would like to make, and why as Indonesia particularly is not very happy, you know, if this problem gets stuck, is because this already has created a lot of strain in the body politic of ASEAN, especially in relation to between Thailand and Indonesia, and especially between the armed forces. It has brought about that we are closer to the Vietnamese military people and they are closer to the Chinese military people, and that our military is not talking to the Thai military as they should. And I mean visits and of course sales to Thailand and what have you, and also visits. We have a military attaché now for the first time in Jakarta from Vietnam, and there is a lot more visit going on than you can discern in public, I tell you, between our military and the Vietnamese military, especially our military people visit to Vietnam. You know, our top middle-level ranking people has all been to Vietnam. Our National Defense College is visiting Vietnam. And so forth, like the Thai is being doing, you know, with in the thousands of them maybe already, I don't know, if not in the hundreds, with the Chinese. And there is no exchange really, in, according to me, you know, in depth, and between Thailand, the Thai military, and Indonesian military. We all have to be thankful to Suharto, you know, that he still kept the military under control, our military, in this sense. And that he still is very much pro-ASEAN. And of course, Kotak has helped by refusing his proposal in 84, you know. But at the same time, without a Suharto in the future, you know, our younger military chaps will be much more, I think, difficult to support all this ASEAN thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Yusuf. Now we are ready to open this up for discussion. Carl, and then...
A couple of questions. I guess a question for each of the paper givers, as well as, I guess we've heard the discussant's point of view, but what do the paper givers think of the potential for Vietnam actually withdrawing its troops by 1990? And the related question, what evidence do they see for an actual fait accompli by 1990. The reason I ask these questions is, if anything, the constellation of military forces arrayed against the Heng Samrin regime are far more impressive today than they were, let's say, 5 years ago. The guerrilla warfare problem faced by the Heng Samrin regime is, if anything, much more substantial today, at least in numbers, than it was 4 or 5 years ago. The size of the Heng Samrin forces themselves have indeed grown. But I get the impression that these forces are as soft as a grape. And the ability of, in particular, forces from the ANS, that is the Sihanouk forces under Prince Ranarit, to operate in conjunction with Heng Samrin forces against the Vietnamese is beginning to be an interesting and ironic oddity of this seemingly endless war. Therefore, I'd like to know what Doug and Yumono think about the prospects for, first of all, a fait accompli, and secondly, an actual total Vietnamese withdrawal, because I think on the answers to these two questions hinge the ability of the United States and Japan and China and all the other players to move.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. I think I want to raise two points without preempting my comments for the next session. First, I think whilst the paper by Don a couple of days ago and the paper by Doug emphasized perhaps a resolution of the problem lies with Hanoi, and that perhaps changes in the leadership in Hanoi and how they approach foreign policy may actually determine what changes or how this conflict can be resolved. I think I would like to put across a complementary viewpoint here in that I think perhaps we are not giving due attention to the Thai viewpoint to the whole conflict. And I think this is very important. If the Khmer resistance is able to operate within Kampuchea and to deny consolidation to the Heng Samrin regime, it is to a large extent a function of the Thai government attitude towards the whole conflict. And I think Thai security here is involved. Unless and until Thailand re-examines the manner in which it approaches its security, either that its traditional approach of through some sort of buffer, and whether it can accept to live with a neighbor who is either hostile or not friendly towards Thailand. I think that is a very important consideration. And we've talked about yesterday or the day before how perhaps you can walk the cat back. And here I think perhaps there needs to be examination from the ASEAN point of view, how ASEAN can actually perhaps come to accept a situation which is less than ideal. ASEAN, I think, may now have to look at this and perhaps not accept totally, but be prepared and to live with this situation for a very long time to come. Here, I think I'm more in line with Doug in the sense I think this is not a conflict that can be resolved in the next 3 to 5 years. It will drag on, and ASEAN will have to look at how it can manage it with minimal cost. That's point number one. I think point number two, I think, is the actual situation in Kampuchea, which again I think is very important in looking at how perhaps what are the strengths of the various parties and how this conflict could move towards resolution. I think at the moment no one is really sure of what is the exact situation within Kampuchea. Speaking to Thai intelligence, different people, different field commanders, one gets different pictures. Although assessments, as Carl was trying to put across, that the Khmer resistance forces have grown, and perhaps today their strength and activities may be much more than they were 5 years ago, I very seriously doubt this. I doubt it on a number of grounds in the sense that I think the report, the claims of these groups are far exaggerated. Speaking to our own people in Malaysia who look at this in some detail, both talking to Thais as well as to a number of other people, the general assessment, it varies, and the feeling is that perhaps what one should look at is not so much the claims of the Khmer resistance forces, but to what extent the Heng Samrin regime has been able to consolidate its position politically, Whilst the growth of the Heng Samrin regime army is certainly important, it is not a very major factor, because I think this whole issue of Vietnamese invasion by 1990 is really a non-issue, in the sense that in a discussion with Co Tuc, which a team from ISIS had last year, I think he very clearly indicated that this 1990 withdrawal has a number of conditions that goes with this withdrawal. And that is linked to the security situation within Kampuchea. And if Vietnam believes that the security situation is deteriorating, there is nothing to prevent the Vietnamese coming back. So I think the strength of the Heng Samrin regime, whilst it's important, perhaps it is not as relevant as one would make it out to be. The emphasis maybe should be on political consolidation and economic reconstruction within Kampuchea. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Carolina?
Yes, I just want to ask some questions regarding the suggestion that was made by Yusuf earlier on what the United States and Japan might do in order to, in effect, win away Vietnam from Soviet dependency, and that is to open up trade, provide technical assistance, provide investments to Vietnam. I wonder if this is within the range of American policy options. First, secondly, I want to find out also how Thailand would feel about it, because you know, obviously you are going to strengthen Vietnam, relieve it of its central concern right now, which is economic difficulties and economic problem solving, and this might threaten Thailand some more. How would this sit with China? And then fourthly, what kind of influence, if any, would the United States and Japan have on Vietnam's future behavior after they have done all these things?
Nobu.
It's only natural that any country or people are egoistic, seeking for national security and national interest. Soviets and Vietnamese are especially so. Therefore, there should be quite severe give-and-take relations or quid pro quo between Soviet Union and Vietnam in their alliance. Most important Soviet take or gains from Vietnam is military bases in Vietnam. It might be quite clear. Then what is the most important Vietnamese takes from Soviet Union? Soviet support for Vietnamese invasion into Cambodia, or Soviet acquiescence to Vietnamese regional hegemony, or military aid, or economic aid. If we could clarify this kind of give-and-take relations or quid pro quo, maybe in the paper we had better mention about it or clarify it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Say?
I have two questions and one response to Carolina. The question is that I'd like to know more about the reasoning that Yusuf said that it's a solution or improvement of the Afghan situation will help the solution of the Cambodian issue. Is it that way, that is the improvement of the Afghan situation, that means a substantial retreat of the Soviet military forces from Afghan, will surely improve the Sino-Soviet relations, and then that provide the Chinese more conciliatory attitude toward the solution, to accept the de facto Vietnamese influence over the two other Indonesian smaller countries. And then Vietnam could retreat its military force from Cambodia. That kind of logical sequences right, or not, I'd like to know very much about that. The second is the possibility of, related with Carl's question, which is there any real danger or possibility in terms of fait accompli making by the Vietnam on Cambodia? That means the Vietnamization of Cambodia. And the Vietnamese army might withdraw by early 1990, but a significant portion of the Vietnamese civilian will become a Cambodian citizen. And then it's in that sense the Vietnamese will continue to live in dominate the Cambodian politics or management of Cambodia. And is any report, the paper writers or youth, or anyone else ready to make any suggestions for that? That's my second question. And my response to Carolina on the Japanese investment on Vietnam, or aid to Vietnam, and its possible repercussion on Thailand or China. As Yusuf said, the Japanese government officially made a very clear intention that to give aid to Vietnam on the condition that Vietnam should retreat its military force from Cambodia, and the Cambodian issue should be settled in the conditions which ASEAN and the Chinese will approve. If that conditions are met, then the Japanese government is ready to give a pretty significant amount of aid. And that kind of commitment won't provoke either Thailand or China.
Thank you. Leo. I have four people now, and I think we'll have to cut it off at that point. Myself. Don, Laito, and Hiroshi. And I will try to set a good example by keeping my remarks down to about 2 minutes or so. I want to raise 3 points. First, I recall, this is anecdotal, a discussion with a very prominent Soviet several years ago who made a point that I more or less dismissed. His point was that in the 21st century, the threat of China would be a formidable one for the area. Mind you, this was after rapprochement between the Soviet Union and China was already underway, that the opposition that could be envisaged would be some kind of coalition between India, Indonesia, and Vietnam. As I say, I dismiss this, but I find Yusuf's comment that Indonesia is coming closer and closer to Vietnam terribly interesting, because I think that is the Soviet view, or hope, you might say, that this relationship can be not only a counter to China, but also of advantage to the Soviet Union. And maybe there's more in this than I was prepared to accept at the time. I must say that I do think the Soviets are frustrated at the moment, and I've had that indication from several sources. They do believe that Vietnam has badly mismanaged its domestic affairs, and that concerns them because of the waste of Soviet materials, etc., when the Soviets themselves are hard-pressed. And I think they've been quite tough in private, that's my belief, with Hanoi, and that has resulted, you know, in some of the public self-criticism In fact, the Vietnamese have admitted that the Soviets aren't very happy. Now, the second point I would raise is this assumption that somehow, I don't think this runs through the papers so much. In fact, I don't think it is a problem of the papers, but some of the discussion has somehow suggested that China can be brought round to accept a Hanoi fait accompli. I just don't believe that. I think the Chinese have quite as much tenacity as the Vietnamese, and they're a whale of a lot bigger. And I don't see any evidence in my discussions with the Chinese that they are reconciled at all to what they called Vietnamese hegemony over Indochina. Nor do I see any evidence that they're about to shift to that position. So I think there's some wishful thinking here, if that is a view. Now, the final point is addressed to Doug, and it's partly a query, partly a comment. You make a strong point, Doug, of how ideological Vietnamese leadership has been, of how tenacious they have been with respect to a particular interpretation of Marxism-Leninism. You've read a lot more than I have, a great deal more in Vietnamese literature. But my impression has been that in certain respects, unless you define nationalism as ideology, the Vietnamese have been less good Marxist-Leninists, much more interested in united front tactics, partly as a pragmatic approach to how to win allies in these various wars. They have not emphasized traditional Marxism-Leninism in their appeals for support to various interest groups in the United States, in France earlier, in Europe, elsewhere. They've talked about, you know, uniting the Vietnamese people against imperialism, but that's not just a Marxist theme, that's a general theme. And I don't really see that they've been highly ideological in the Marxist sense. And I'd like to hear your viewpoint on that. My next person, Lai Tho.
Okay, thank you. I have 2 points. And the first point is related to Professor Scalapino's comment on ideology, Marxism, and Leninism. And I would like to address this question to Doug Pike. Well, I'm very interested in your analysis on the impact of the concept of struggle on the international relations of Hanoi. And I wonder if you can elaborate a little bit on some of the sources that would influence this concept. One can think of course, the concept of dialectics in Marxism. But I can also see that it is also possible that the Vietnamese could be under the influence of the Chinese, in the sense that, for example, even for Mao, he talked a lot about struggle, and of course he has a theory of contradictions. So I wonder if that has some impact on the Vietnamese as far as this concept is concerned. But last but not least, well, you are a specialist on Vietnam. Can you tell us some of the indigenous sources, Vietnamese sources, of this concept? And to what extent is this concept Vietnamese? That's my first point. My second point is addressed to both paper writers, and is about the presence, the Soviet presence in Vietnam. Well, as far as I can remember, it was reported that Deng Xiaoping mentioned that the Soviet Union could keep the bases in Da Nang and Cam Ranh Bay. Now, I want to ask to what extent is that true? If it is true, how do you explain that? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hiroshi.
Yes, thank you. Miyamoto-san singled out deliberately the value of military bases of Vietnam as one of the biggest gains of the Soviet Union has been enjoying. I do understand he intentionally simplified the picture for argument, for discussion. But usually among specialists, that's the most important one, but that's not single reason why Soviets has been adhering to holding supporting Vietnam despite other losses which the Soviet Union has been enduring because of its support to Soviet Union. And furthermore, they say that once war break out for some reason, Cam Ranh Bay and Da Nang bases are much weaker than a basis in Philippines. And secondly, therefore, more than military objective, they must have good reason for Soviet Union to stick to holding these bases, supporting Vietnam. I can think of two more reasons.